KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell from KCRW.com. My guest, director Philip Noyce, seems to have a new career going for himself. In his last three films, Rabbit Proof Fence, The Quiet American, and now Catch a Fire, there's a new political bent to his films, I would say. Of course, his previous work includes films like Dead Calm, the Jack Ryan films. Phil, thanks for coming back, first of all.
Thank you for having me back.
We've talked about so many themes that run through your movies. These last three movies very much have been kind of about a kind of awakening or like a moment that sort of crystallizes for people.
Yeah. And Catch a Fire is a story set in apartheid South Africa, the story of an ordinary working man, a black man, who is pushed so far by the apartheid regime, pushed down so far that he has nowhere to go but to decide that he's going to take action, that he's going to try and change the system. Of course, that involves huge sacrifice. He has to leave his wife and two children, the job that's provided him a little bit of happiness and security.
And also provided him a way to sort of like walk through his life narcotized by having a few creature comforts. He believes that he's basically part of the system.
Yeah. And he has to give it all up for an unknown future, but a future that's got to be better than the life that he's leading now, at least better than the life that he's allowed to leave.
We should say, too, we're talking about a real-life story that not a lot of people know about. I was asking beforehand, the writer Sean Slovo, who's worked on several films about South Africa, I'd ask you when she'd written a script, and when did you say that she'd done that?
Well, Sean Slovo, who is South African, although she lived most of her life in exile, is the daughter of Joe Slovo, who was the head of the ANC, the African National Congress's military wing. And her dad was responsible for organizing incursions into apartheid South Africa.
He's depicted in this film.
Yeah, destabilizing the apartheid regime. And in the late 80s, he told his daughter the story of Patrick Chumuso, an ordinary foot soldier, not one of the celebrated leaders of the anti-apartheid movement. And Joe suggested that if Sean, who had already written a screenplay and that was turned into a film called A World Apart, which was the story
of
her story and her relationship with her mother, who was assassinated by the apartheid regime back in 1992. Joe felt that this was the story of an ordinary man, and therefore it was a story that needed to be told. In 1991, Patrick Chumuso, our hero, was released from the infamous Robben Island, the prison at the bottom of Africa near Cape Town that housed so many of the anti-apartheid leaders and foot soldiers. Almost 1,000 of them were there, including, of course, Nelson Mandela for almost two decades, or for two complete decades.
Yes.
And Sean sat down, talked to Patrick for about 4 or 5 days, thought it was an amazing story, but she put it away. She put it away until the turn of the century, when by that stage she felt there was enough perspective now. The miracle of South Africa, the transition from bitter, divided society, from hatred, from oppression, from aggression, the miracle was now official. The country had gone through a transition peacefully. A new society had been created. And she felt that Patrick, the hero's life, also had evolved to another point where at last his story had an ending, a glorious ending like South Africa's glorious ending.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Philip Noyce, the director. His new film is Catch a Fire. I guess as we talk about this, so one of the things, and I was slightly chilled by it until I saw the film and did some reading beforehand, because Sean Slovo was part of that generation of filmmakers or writers where in the late 80s there were films being made about South Africa that were being told from white perspectives. For many people, they won't understand until they see it. That's a story of a black South African being radicalized and taking action against his own oppression, which is a new kind of thing to do. But still, in its way, it's almost like a Graham Greene novel, but with a dark-skinned protagonist instead of a white protagonist.
You mean because of the moral choices that he has to make?
Yes, and also that sort of sense of basically walking through your – sleepwalking through your life mm-hmm. and having to be awakened. That's very much a Graham Greene kind of supposition.
You know, it's wonderful always to come on your show and talk to you because you always tell me things that I hadn't quite realized about my own movies. But now I'm thinking about it. It's you're right. You know, this is Thomas Fowler in The Quiet American. Although I suppose you could argue that his awakening, he had other reasons for awakening, in as much as he at the same time as exacting retribution on someone who he felt had committed wrong, he was also offing his rival in love. Whereas Patrick Tremusso, you know, yes, he's sleepwalking, but he decides that he's going to give up what he has for a greater good that he may or may not achieve.
And it's this thing we've talked about here before, but there is this aspect I find in so many of your films of spirituality. And this film, Catch a Fire, definitely kind of falls into that thematic scope of your films.
Yeah, you know, I've always been fascinated by South Africa. Because the history of that country is quite extraordinary. It overturns many notions that we have. I've always marveled at that transition. How could those people who had been oppressed for so long, how could they say to their oppressors, "We forgive you"? How could that? And so, you know, I felt that alone, to hear those two words spoken in the movie towards the end, "I'm sorry," was reason enough to make this film alone, just to celebrate that miracle of South Africa. And our hero, Patrick Tremusso,
who's played by Derek Luke,
Describes that process, not in the movie, although it's dealt with in the movie. When he talks about the 10 years that he spent on Robben Island, of course, in their folly or maybe their wisdom, the apartheid leaders incarcerated 1,000 young black South Africans on Robben Island who all had one thing in common, their opposition to apartheid.
And this
place became a think tank. And as Patrick describes it, he says, there wasn't a day went past that we didn't sit and dream about the day that maybe we'd get out of here. And then we'd go further and we'd dream about the day that maybe we'd come to power, we'd actually rule our own country. And then we'd dream about what we'd do if that ever happened. And the thing that kept coming up again and again was, we're going to show them and we're going to show the world that we're better than them.
It's the treatment, my guess is director Philip Noyce. His new film is Catch a Fire. That thing you're talking about, that almost is a story in and of itself. An entire prison filled with political prisoners who all have the same dream and goal.
Dream, because most prisons are filled with people who are fighting each other for survival.
Even in the gulags in the Soviet Union, there wasn't that kind of
unity
of purpose.
Yeah, and what they did in that prison, of course, was decide that as a test for what we're going to do for the rest of South Africa, let's see if we can win over our guards, because they're the only people we can be in contact with. And that was their first aim. And
to some extent, they succeeded in that.
They succeeded in doing that, and they succeeded in then uniting the whole of South Africa. Of course, there were predictions of rivers of blood in the streets, of total upheaval and chaos, of anarchy, when black people would come to power. They were all wrong. They came to power instigated a glorious democracy.
Well, you allude
that's
to
all
it
encompassing.
You allude to it in the movie where someone says, when Voss says, in fact, the character played by Tim Robbins, the horrible leader of the police, says that, you know, this is all from Russia. I mean, basically, they were saying this wasn't even their ideas. You know, these are Soviet unions gave the ANC the idea for the revolution.
Well, that was partially true, of course. The ANC was partially
financed
by the Soviet bloc countries and armed by them, partially. I mean, there was also great support from America, from other countries, and from inside South Africa, and of course,
and other parts of Africa also, themselves,
also support from many white South Africans.
But that thing is a big part of it too. This because basically, a chunk of the movie is about having to make a decision on your own, and I need that idea to be reintroduced to people. So many people have forgotten that anytime there's a revolution in Africa, we can even look at Patrice Lumumba. Everybody always said it's the Soviet Union because they just want you to be communist and not think for yourselves. I mean, because the supposition was that these Africans would be incapable of leading themselves anyway.
That's true. And, you know, Sean Slovo's father, Joe Slovo, head of the military wing, was considered to be public enemy number one because so many people in the apartheid regime felt that, hey, this whole revolution that can only be organized by a white man. So if we eliminate him, we're going to kill the whole thing.
I guess I'm fascinated by this movie too, just because getting Tim Robbins to play somebody who we understand but we never sympathize with, as the guy who's basically responsible for setting these events into motion and using horrific psychological torture techniques.
Yeah. I don't think that I've ever met a policeman or a policewoman who didn't join the force in order to do good. What happens next is another story. But, you know, the character that Tim Robbins plays, based on several real people who were members of the security branch of the South African police force, is a man who could claim that he was an African, as so many Afrikaners did feel that their forefathers had been continuously living in Southern Africa for almost 400 years. But a man who, like any soldier or police officer, has sworn to uphold the status quo. It's not the position of a soldier or a policeman to decide the laws of the land. Their job is to uphold them, to preserve them, to preserve the institutions of the country. And a man who has a lifestyle and a family that he wants to protect. And Tim was absolutely fascinated with how a man like that, who is nevertheless serving a system that is absolutely rotten to its core and corrupt and oppressive, how does he act? How does he do his job? And how does he maintain his sense of morality?
Well, by making the family a part of it, as you do in the film, and these kind of really moments that leave you awestruck when he's sitting playing folk songs and sitting with his family, and then a couple of scenes later uses one of those folk songs in a torture scene with Patrick. It's just kind of astonishing.
You know, I think it's always more interesting if we can. We call them bad guys when we're talking about villains in movies. But if we can recognize how we could be the bad guy, it's much more interesting.
It's The Treatment. My guest is director Philip Noyes. His newest film is Catch a Fire, which deals with the radicalization of – you can't call him an innocent because basically by going along with the system, he's to some extent complicit in it, isn't he?
I guess. But the radicalization of an ordinary working man in apartheid South Africa.
And to make a movie about that sacrifice of the everyday, to sort of – and the way you depict the everyday at the very beginning, I mean, it's the colors are so much brighter. It's like a really rich slice of quotidian life.
Right.
And to sort of bleed the color out of that as things become more and more difficult. That's a fascinating way to sort of start the movie, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's 1980 and – Patrick Chamuso is a foreman at the Secunda Oil Refinery, a refinery near Johannesburg that converts coal into oil or gasoline, a technology that was purchased by the South Africans from, interestingly, Nazi Germany. They went to Germany in 1943 and investigated this technology. The German factories were all destroyed by the Allied bombing. But in 1950, they built the first plant near Johannesburg because South Africa has an abundance of coal. And then when anti-apartheid sanctions were introduced in the 70s, they built two more plants at Secunda, about 120 miles north of Johannesburg. And this is the plant where our hero was a foreman and driver, and where he had a good job for a black South African in that time. Lived in a house with, well, not electricity, but running water, not inside, but outside.
But owned a car.
And had free time.
To the extent that there was a middle class among that group, he was solidly in that middle class.
Absolutely. And had a beautiful wife, played in the movie by South African actress Bonnie Henner.
Who's wonderful in the movie.
Yeah, you liked her? She's great, isn't she? I think so.
We'll take a break. My guest is Philip Noyce. He's the director of the new film, Catch a Fire. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. My guest is director Philip Noyce. His newest film is Catch a Fire. There's so much emotional complication in it. And the richness in the story, I think, comes as much from the fact that it's about the sacrifices you have to make in everyday life. And those are as key to the film as a bigger political strokes. And that stuff where his family is basically in crisis is kind of amazing stuff to watch.
Well, it was a dilemma in those days. The security police were extremely thorough in their investigation of ANC sympathizers. And Patrick, as you see in the story, at a certain point decides that he can take his life no more and that he has to leave the country, as many young South Africans did, go to the border states, in his case, Mozambique, and offer himself as a foot soldier in the fight against apartheid. But he knew that if he had told his wife or anyone around him what he was doing, then that knowledge could be the hangman's noose for them, because they would be coerced. If in any way they revealed a knowledge of where he was, they would be coerced by extreme methods of interrogation to reveal where he was and to give him up. And that, of course, leads to the tragedy of what unfolds in the story, which is as much a love story gone wrong as it is a political thriller. The tragic consequences of his decision, you know, to go, and the extraordinary gains that he made as a human, they were all there. All the extremes were there in the original story. And that's why as soon as I read it, I was given it at 4 o'clock. I read it on a plane traveling back to my home country, Australia, that night. And I got to the airport the next morning and rang up and said, I got to make this story. It seems so pertinent to this moment in time, even though it was set back in South Africa in 1980.
It's The Treatment. My guest is director Philip Noyce. We're talking about Catch a Fire. These last three films that we're talking about, between Rabbit Proof Fence and Quiet America and now this, they're very much about real-world politics. Because I think in watching this movie and watching Catch a Fire, that's the kind of movie that would have been made 30 years ago, but the white head of the police would have been the star and he would have been played by Roger Moore or Trevor Howard or somebody. I mean, and those films actually were being made in the early 70s with that point of view. Films like The Wild Geese or Diamonds, which are really horrific to watch nowadays.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just in terms of the politics of these films, these three films specifically, and setting them in the real world, like I said, or at least in the case of The Quiet American, even though there's some fictionalization, obviously, it's something that actually happened. What you think has sort of like brought you to these three films at this point in your career?
Well, it's actually brought me full circle back to where I started.
That's right, isn't it? You're going back to the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah. The first film I made was called Backroads, which you probably haven't seen, hasn't been released in America. Backroads was the central characters were Aboriginal Australians, black Australians. It was a political tract crossed with a road movie. And the second film, Newsfront, which was the story of a newsreel cameraman in the post-war era and dealt with the whole for Australia, McCarthy era, the anti-communist witch hunts of the early 50s, and combined a lot of newsreel footage in narrative.
It's interesting you mention that because this is going back full circle, isn't it? And I just wonder for you if it felt like you wanted to do that because that was maybe something that was missing from your own life in terms of filmmaking as well as missing from a lot of films in general.
It was missing from my own life. You know, I came to America like millions of people as a migrant guest worker, except I was working in Hollywood and loving it, like so many migrant guest workers who love the opportunity to do the work they want to do. you know, and but I was making genre films. You know, they were essentially thrillers. I was good at making the international thriller, the one that, you know, you could play anywhere in the world and dealt with sort of world issues. That was my specialty.
And it felt like you weren't yourself
anymore.
I
wasn't telling my own stories.
Yeah.
I began to feel that I was that all the movies were pre-masticated. You know, they were based on bestsellers. They starred big stars. They had $30 million P&A budgets, prints and advertising budgets. And I was the guy at the end of the conveyor belt that yelled action and cut. It wasn't like that, but that's how I started to feel. And then I read this story of Rabbit Proof Fence, the story of these three little children who run away from a re-education center in order to maintain the sanctity of their own culture, to remain in contact with who they really are. And I'm reading this story and I think, hey, wow. This is actually me. I'm that little kid, and I need to go back to Australia to remind myself of who I am and also to make stories that I really care about. And I guess I was lucky that I'd reached that point within the system where people sort of felt, okay, he makes movies that make money. So I thought, while they still believe that, why don't I slip a few in that I really want to make and hope that they make money as well? Everyone said Rabbit Proof Fence wouldn't make a dime. It turned out to be one of the most successful films that I ever made. The only difference was that 19 people who made the film, including the three little kids who star in it, and me and Peter Gabriel and all the other people involved, we own the picture. We own the movie, and we will forever. And, you know, we used the system to distribute the movie all around the world. The same as now, this story is being taken to the world by Focus in America and United International Pictures, which is a part of Universal, to the rest of the world.
But it's amazing, because after a certain time, you just felt like, I'm not Philip Noyce anymore. I'm just doing these things where I'm solving problems in these big films. These films that
I thought I was Philip Noyce. It's just that I felt that Philip Noyce was on the verge of being a Hollywood hack.
It's The Treatment. My guest is director Philip Noyce. His newest film is Catch a Fire. Well, let's talk a little bit about the casting, because I think Derek Luke has shown a lot of range and hasn't been given a chance to do a lot of things. I mean, if you look between Antoine Fisher and the great little comedy he made, Pieces of April, where he's like a leading man doing comedy stuff and only a handful of scenes, you think this guy should have been given something bigger to do a long time ago. And you give him a chance to play all those things in this movie.
Yeah, well, Derek, you know, I was determined to cast a South African.
Really?
Initially.
Okay.
And I found a lot of great actors there. But then I branched out. I went to Nigeria, which has a huge film industry in the number of films that are made, probably the biggest in the world, actually, in the number of movies. Went to London, to New York, and finally I arrived back in L.A. And in walks this young man who I'd seen his movies, I'd never met him, and he's very quiet, and he played one of the scenes in the movie. It's a scene where he makes a false confession. A very traumatic scene, but it captures the essence of the man who has been pushed down so far that there's only one way to go, give up or fight back. And he played it in a way that totally explained the story to me, which is what you want from an actor, but you don't expect that he'll do it at an audition, straight off the street, without saying a word to him, without being directorial, without contributing. And he really did explain what would become the title of the movie, Catch a Fire, because a fire was lit in that actor, in the belly of that character, right there in front of me. And I said, hey, I could never find anyone who can do this. anywhere else in the world. And he walked out with the – there was no argument. He had to be Patrick Tremuso because he also had that that quiet quality, you know, a peace-loving family man. And yet, you know, you could believe him also as the reluctant warrior hero.
It's great to watch that too because he gets to play – it's a big part. I mean, there's a lot that's asked of him.
Yeah. He has to do a lot. Go through a lot of emotions, a lot of extremes, you know, I think he pulls it off. You know, I think this is his big breakthrough.
Oh, I think so too. But I guess I find myself wondering a little bit if you felt that it was important to make the film. Let's just say economic considerations, budget considerations aside, if you felt it was more important to make the film on this intimate level rather than an epic level.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
But we had enough money. I mean, the budget that we were given, which was a figure, was $15 million. Without exploiting people, that buys a lot more in South Africa than it does in, say, my home country or here in the United States. You know, I didn't want the scope of the movie to overwhelm the characters.
I guess that's what I'm asking.
You know,
yes.
And the relationships, as it could have.
That's what, I guess, in my way, that's what I was trying to get at, because it sort of helps to sort of have it be on this scale so we recognize that it's a family that's in crisis as much as a country.
Yeah, and two families, in fact.
Absolutely.
The Tim Robbins' character's family as well.
Tell me about meeting Patrick himself for the first time, what that was like for you.
Yeah, Patrick Tremuso. Well, I went to South Africa 2 years ago to start the process of making this movie, went up to the near the Mozambican border where he now lives with his new wife, and there he started with his pension from the ANC, an orphanage. There is a huge proportion of the people in that area have been affected by HIV. And there are way too many orphans in his valley, as there are all over Africa, Southern Africa, and in South Africa. And Patrick has taken it upon himself to be the father to all of these children. There's more coming every week, as you'll see if you see the movie.
Well, we're out of time. These things always go so fast when you come. Please, whenever you got a new film, please feel free to come back and do the show again.
I'll be here as long as you keep counseling me.
Well, again, I got to raise my rates. In the meantime, see his movie. My guest is director Philip Noyce's new film is Catch a Fire. Again, Phil, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Our technical director, KCRW, who's also the editor, is Bob Carlson, with technical assistance from Paul Ruest at Argo Networks in New York. Mary Bradley is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.